To go deeper into our episodes, please visit the show notes in your podcast app. Or, to get a fuller, unedited experience, go find this episode on spotlightonpodcast.com. There, the notes are packed with links to resources that give you more about the people and topics explored here. Hello, and welcome to Spotlight On, a production of 23 Media Ventures. I'm your host, Lawrence Purrier. Today, the spotlight is shining on in a much different way than usual. I'm turning the microphone over to guest host Miriam Boulos. Miriam has been a guest contributor to Bonus Tracks, the official blog of Spotlight On, since August 2023. Miriam publishes with us frequently, and her work has included interviews with and essays about a diverse array of artists, like James Walsh of Star Sailor, Chapel Rowan, Fuera, Ella Moore, Chagall, and most recently, Pep Talk. As an international contributor, Miriam consistently broadens our view and uncovers new voices for us. But even more importantly, she's shining the spotlight on gender inclusivity and other forms of diversity that we are very, very grateful for. It's been a privilege to share our platform with her. Miriam is joined in conversation for this episode by Swedish alt-pop artist Lucky Low. This bit about the artist, quoted from her bio, gives a glimpse of what to expect in their talk. Quote, Lucky Low unites people through her music by shedding light on the dark side of existence and turning trauma into triumph, end quote. As a mission statement, it's pretty strong. So now, over to Miriam Boulos and Lucky Low.
Today, I'd love to dive a little deeper into the body of work, into the album, not specifically into one song. And
sure.
To start with, I feel like you've put your heart on your sleeve on this record. You have built up momentum and ground there like never before, while keeping the softness. There's something so unbelievably comforting and optimistic about your music that uplifts my mood every time I listen to it. And the big feel, the name, definitely it lives up to its name, I think. Can you share more about the inspiration behind this album's name and the overall atmosphere you aim to create in the beginning?
I'm going to try to explain it as best as I can. But yeah, the big feel started actually with the title. So I don't remember where I got the idea, but I write down my ideas.
Yeah.
I have a diary where I write everything down. And this title popped into my head. And then I thought, that's a good title of an album. And I'd like to make that. So that was during the tour, when I was touring with the first album, Super Carry. I already had this idea growing inside of me that I wanted to continue with certain aspects from the first album in terms of the way I've written the songs. That each song is a story, and I wanted to continue to work with my band and the same producer because I love it so much. Mm-hmm. So I had like the safe space from the beginning. I made a mood board for the album.
Okay.
I really like making mood boards. How I make mood boards is usually it's like a sonic mood board. It's not necessarily pictures. I started with the title, The Big Feel, and I knew I wanted to have an album that was exploring dynamics more than the first album in terms of like to have some songs that were like really big with strings and horns. And then some songs that were just like, just quite acoustic, focusing on the banjo more. And then I wanted to have like this kind of warm, kind of modern retro sound with a little flirty wink to the 80s. So I started like writing everything down and also writing some references of other songs. And I remembered there was some Fleet Foxes there and there was like Wasteland. And I was really listening a lot to Kate Bush as well. So she was a lot of Kate Bush references. And then after, like when I had that idea, what I needed is just to let the songs come on their own. So I wrote a lot of songs. I think I wrote about 30 something sketches or ideas. And from that, it filtered down into these 9 final songs that each have their own story.
That's insane that you wrote all these songs, but you came to filter them down. How did you even manage to pick out?
It wasn't very hard. I do think I've kept a couple of songs that I might release on another record, that just the mood was different, but I wanted to have this red thread, which is the Lucky Lou sound of songs that are stating something very, very clearly.
Yeah.
And that always ends on a note of hope. So there was some criteria.
Yeah.
That needed to be fulfilled for each song. And it's just a gut feeling, I think, that in the end kind of decides it. And also, there was a Swedish song that ended up there as well, which wasn't really the plan at all, but it just happened. And it was one of those one-hit wonders in the studio where I just brought the sheet music and say, hey, let's try this. And then on take 3, we had the song. Like, that never happened. Usually.
And this particular song, it's such a captivating track, even though I do not understand Swedish. But it adds this unique layer to the album. How do you decide when to incorporate Swedish into your music, and what does it really bring to the overall storytelling of the album?
When I studied jazz music, I used to write songs mostly in Swedish only, listening to a lot of Swedish jazz singers and like Monica Zetterlund and the big ones. And I think in this case, I wrote that song for a friend of mine as a comfort song for her and for myself. And at the time, I didn't even consider releasing it. But it was just so special. Like, I loved it so much. And in the end, I, on a whim, just, like I said, threw it into the mix in the studio. And it just, it became so nice that it wasn't even a question that it shouldn't be on the album in the end.
Yeah.
But I did think, like, oh, it's a really smart thing to have it on Swedish and not, because there's a very small percentage of the world that are going to understand what it's about. But on the other hand, now I think I'm going to explore that more. And I would like to write songs that are mixing languages because I speak 4 languages. So it makes sense for me to try to facilitate that, because I love languages. And if you can say things in different ways, there's different energies, and my voice also changes depending on the language.
That's so true. Each language really serves a specific purpose in conveying a message. And as you said, it sounds different as well. So that was really interesting to see on that album in particular. En helt vanlig dag, du ringde och sa, nu finns det tid att märka gamla sår. Flera år som nu uppenbarat sig, i tystnad låg det sår och väntade på dig. Förlåt att jag blev glad för att du behövde ha en pratstund med mig som honung till din själ. Jag vill dig allting väl, speciellt när det är svårt. Du skäms för den du var, men jag älskar dig. Du är så kom alla tankar på en gång. Och mitt hjärta bankar för att sjunga gång på gång. Du drunknar i dig själv, men du kan nå i land. As a follow-up to your debut albums for Carrie, now The Big Feel reflects some changes. And as you said, you wanted to have an album exploring dynamics more. You wanted bigger sounds. How would you describe this, the evolution of your sound from the first album to this one?
The first album was made in lockdown. We were, like, fortunately in Denmark, able to still meet a group of 5, and we were 4 in the band at the moment, at that time. So there was a lot of time to sort of really cut to the core of what the sound was going to be, because Lucky Low was brand new.
Right.
So the first album is like really, for me, just super, not sharp, but it's such a like collected piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did have the time to do that. And moving on to the next album, there was some things that I wish we had time to explore more. So that's what I did on the next album, but still keeping the good parts of the first ones, which is the band, producer, and also the way I think about songwriting for Lucky Lou, which is like pop music with a twist.
Yeah, it's actually interesting you say pop music with a twist. I've seen lots of outlets and music reviews consider your music, yes, alternative pop. How would you describe your own sound?
I would say that it's like a love child between retro classic songwriting and just jazz experimentation, in a sense. I don't know if it makes sense, but I do think
it does.
From the I just saw an interview with Mitski, for example, and she said that for her, it starts with the melody, and that that the melody should, you should be able to sing the melody by itself.
Yes.
And, and I'm exactly the same, that the melody is at center stage, but the parts and the colors around the melody, you know, you can cut a bar or two, or you can spice the chords a little extra.
Mm.
Or we work a lot also with Søren, our producer, to sort of record noise and manipulate the noise and put it subtly, very subtly into the mix so it doesn't become too clean as well. It has all of these kind of aspects to it that takes it away from traditional songwriting, but it still feels safe.
A lot of people could listen to it.
Yeah, it's not super provocative in that sense, but it has some surprises in it.
Definitely. That's something that that got me hooked on this one. And I'm so glad you actually bring up Mitski, because while listening to the album, I had Mitski in mind. And I would like to know, were there any specific musical influences that have played a significant part in shaping this sound?
Yeah. I have to confess that I just recently started listening to Mitski. But now when I listen, I've listened to all her albums, actually now, after the release of The Big Feet. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. I feel seen in this music.
100%.
But I would say that what I listened to the most during the time of writing The Big Feel was definitely Kate Bush. And Wiseblood. And nice. Carole King.
I love Carole King. Yes.
I love her too.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more Spotlight On right after this break. If you enjoyed this episode of Spotlight On, please share us with a friend and leave a review or star rating on your podcast platform of choice. Thanks. And now, back to Spotlight On.
And how would you navigate this balance between honoring your influences in a way and creating a sound that is uniquely yours? Because your sound is pretty unique. It does have these influences that remind me of Mitski. Sometimes I was shocked to be reminded by Marina and the Diamond. What do you think makes your sound like yours?
It's impossible to escape who you are when you write music. I do try to copy things, but I fail. Like I can't. I fail doing that. So it becomes something different. I remember, for example, when writing Super Carrie, I was inspired by People I've Been Sad with Christine and the Queens. And I was like, what if I would try to make something like this? And it sounds nothing like it, but it does have this kind of sprout of an idea in it that turned into my music. I'm a seasoned musician. Like, I'm not super young anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been writing music for a long time, and I've been singing and playing everything from free jazz improvisation to ambient music to lots of folk music. I've just been quarrying around different genres.
I love that.
It's completely confusing whenever I have to write a biography. That means that the tools I have in my own music bag is something I collected over time. And that's what I, when I write a song, I look into my bag and I see, oh, what if I would use this? And that's why it becomes like a mix. But in the very core of me, I just want to sing really good melodies. Growing up listening to the Beatles, like that's like the, that's the love affair of my life.
We can all relate to that to some extent. Melody is at the core, even though when I listen to your music, what's one of the things that really do strike me are the lyrics and the themes that you bring up and that you touch upon. And on this one, there are great loves, deep sorrows. There's a lot of introspection, reflection. And many of the album tracks, actually, as you said, are stories, but they do touch on the personal. And I was wondering, how do you personally connect with the subjects or stories you address in your lyrics? How do you draw from your own experiences when writing?
Yeah, I think in some capacity or another, it needs to draw from my own life. And then it draws on my imagination also. But the big field is part of the theme was also to like explore the extremities of emotion and coming like kind of dive into the corners as well. Like the big field, the song itself was really difficult to write the lyrics. It took me a while to first kind of understand what it was about. And most of my songs starts with the sprout of an idea for a topic. And then sometimes it comes like through the eyes of a woman. I was on my bike and I got this melody through the eyes of a woman. So that was the topic says itself. I should write a song about see through the eyes of a woman. But the big field that came out of a conversation with the parents of my friend who passed away. And we were having dinner and we were drinking lots of wine. And we had this very moving moment where they told me that they missed having someone they could cheer on in music. So they asked me, like, can we give some of the time we would give to our daughter and give that to you? Because we miss having that in our life. And that was when it clicked for me that I was like, oh my God, the song is about what happens to all the space and time that a person leaves behind. And also the guilt of like feeling that maybe you'll forget the person you lost because you are giving that time to someone else. But in a sense, I wanted to see like, no, it's a way of honoring them actually. So that's kind of, it was like a puzzle. So that's when the last pieces came together. And that's when I was able to finish the lyrics.
Do you consider the big feel an homage to them?
Yeah, they're also dedicated on the album, on the physical release to the family and to my friend Maya as well. But it's kind of like a sister song to Sunrise Sunset, which was the opening song of the first album. Also the opening song of the new album. They belong together.
That's really interesting. I wouldn't have made the connection though. The album, there's a lot of ballads and there's a lot of stripped back, softer tracks, which emphasize a lot the lyrics, but they also emphasize your voice a lot. But there's other more uplifting songs, such as Hey, Let's Go, or even the playful Peak Valley with its funk guitar moments. Could you delve into the creative process behind the more uplifting funk twist that this album brings? I feel like it's ups and downs and ups, and you never expect when it's going to go back down. Are these sorts of emotions you wanted listeners to experience through those ups and downs?
Yeah, I feel like Lucky Lou is definitely a live band. It's a live experience. It maybe more than it's a online album experience. So sometimes I think about what I would like to bring to a concert. And if I could write a song that I can make something fun with when playing it live. And Hey, Let's Go was one of those songs that I wanted to have kind of a talking heads moment of this, okay, you know, this burning down the house, of having like a track that was playful. And we often start the songs by just singing it with the audience. So I teach the audience the, hey, let's go, it's time to feel it in our house, let's go. And then we just start the song and then they are kind of in the band. So that's the idea behind Hey, Let's Go, was to have that kind of moment, as well as playfully trying to manipulate whatever people would come to the concert and be like, hey, if you came with a flirt, now's the time. I should like make your move.
I need to go to your concert now.
Yeah, please. It's a party.
Hey, let's go. I'd like to stay. I would, I should stay. We could be great. So good, can I stay? Cause I like you. Okay, plain and true. I'd like to stay.
And then, of course, it needed to have a big horn section.
Yes.
Because talking heads, obviously.
Yeah.
You need to have that kind of high life vibe. While Peak Valley is very sonically much more simple, much more open. And it has this kind of whangbing, almost Thai guitar thing, which is the sound of Mess, my guitarist. That's how he sounds. Like, it's a very simple song in a sense. It's very repetitive and it just have this kind of 2-5-1 jazz chord structure. Yeah. And I wrote it on this synthesizer I use all the time, which is the Juno 106. And I wanted it to have like lots of space so we could make a feature for Mess and make it like very smooth, but cool. And then also to challenge myself to sing this octave thing. Peak Valley. Yeah, I wrote that song like just a couple of days before we went to the studio. I could barely play it by myself. But then I taught it to the band and it's very immediate as well.
How did you make that octave go out?
Yeah, so we made the high octave this very like airy. And the lower more valley, like more body-ish.
Yeah.
We recorded those separately. And then I almost panicked a bit when I had to sing it live. I've almost learned it, I think. It's difficult. It's very difficult. And I'm dancing at the same time. But for me, that song is kind of the Lucky Lou original vibey thing. In a way, like connected to Super Carrie in the way sonically it's working, just very simple but still has a lot of twists and some small modulational moments that are just like delicious.
Even if I blush to say it, I am sure to live this life with you.
Okay, 'cause life is life.
And this is typical Lucky Low right there.
Yeah. Looking at the basic structure and be like, how can I tweak it
Put a little it out. Bit?
Yeah, just also the big feel, there's a modulation there in the middle of a verse. Usually modulation is like up to a refrain.
Yeah.
But we said, what if we would make it in the middle of the verse? And that's also like a little, like, surprise. I love that music.
Thing out there that just keeps you off guard.
Exactly.
A personal favorite on this album really is A Pretending World. I'm obsessed with this one.
Wow.
It has some of my favorite lyrics on this album, especially the last lines. We love to call it truth, but it frightens me so bad. Can you tell us more? How did you write this one?
Okay, yeah. I wrote it in January, I think, this year. I had been listening like crazy to this song by Wiseblood called A Lot's Gonna Change. I love that song so much. And I was like, oh, I want to write this power ballad piano thing. I had written down in my notes this title, A Pretending World. And I knew I wanted to address the society somehow. At the beginning, I sat down on the piano and I found this kind of chord structure that is more like minor, but modulating, but very simple sound. It came pretty quickly, but I did struggle a lot with the lyrics on this one. I wanted to somehow talk about social media effect on our brain. We have access to so much information today that it's not physically possible for us to comprehend. It confuses us a lot, but it's like intoxicating at the same time. We want to know everything, but our heart is shouting, stop, slow down. So there's an inner struggle there, which I thought was very interesting to write about. I actually took this piece of lyrics to my songwriting class.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, what, can you understand what I'm saying? And I still don't know if I like talked about it clearly enough, but there's something about a longing for safety and feeling scared about where this world is going and what is this generation like doing. At the same time, this kind of urge to fight and be like, I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to try to keep on fighting this pretending world because I want to live in the real world and I want to live in reality. And that's something as a performer or artist, it's very important to me that I want to bring, I don't want to be an escapism. I don't want my music to be escaping this world or be like a temporary pause from it. I want it to encourage you to live even more, really be together with your feelings, even though it's difficult, and still leave you with a sense of hope. I'm not going to leave you in the ditch. I'm going to try to take your hand and bring you through it. And that's, I think it's the overall like theme for me personally of what I'm trying to do as a songwriter.
Super interesting that you say that, because honestly, this album feels like a big hug from a very wise person that you can always count on in the middle of a cinematic greenfield. This is how it feels. And to follow up on A Pretending World, well, I first listened to this song when I was on the metro rushing to work. And I was like, wait a minute. It just was a moment of realization, seeing everyone on their phones while we're all going for the same thing every day, every freaking day, with inner struggles that we don't really talk about. What are we pretending? Is it only a pretending world? Are we actually living? I had all these existential questions come up while listening to it, but also with a pinch of hope by the end of it. I just wanted to share that as well. I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. This was such a wholesome conversation.
Well, thank you so much. First of all, I could talk about this for an hour more, at least. it's like baby steps, but I'm okay with that because I want to do this for a long time. So I'm not in a rush. I'm just going to try to catch one person after the other on the metro and hopefully make them look the world in a different way.
Thank you so much, Miriam and Lucky. And as always, thank you for listening to Spotlight On, a production of 23 Media Ventures. I'm your host and executive producer, Lawrence Purrier. We're produced and edited by Michael Donaldson, with theme music by Q Burns Abstract Message. If you would like to support our work, please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts, or visit us online at spotlightonpodcast.com. There you'll find our free episode archive, weekly postings on our official blog, and a ton more. Thanks for listening, be safe, and stay in touch.